Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open from American Express, presenting the interactive webcast event, Making a Name for Yourself. Kate and Andy Spade and Bobby Brown discuss their leap from business to brand. Created by Open from American Express. Registration at openforumonline.com.
I'm Errol Lewis of the New York Daily News, in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC. If you take pride in being able to rattle off the planets in our solar system, it looks like you'll have to add a few more names to the list. The international body that oversees planet names is about to take a vote on whether to revise the very definition of these celestial bodies. If it passes, you should learn these two right now, Charon and UB313. And if the current candidates for planets under the new definition pass muster, you should add Varuna, Vestas, and 2002 AW197, among others. These new rules come amid a long-running debate over the fate of the smallest of planets, Pluto. The ninth and latest addition to our solar system has battled countless claims against its inclusion in the exclusive club of planets since its addition in 1930. In fact, astronomers say it wouldn't make the cut today if it were just discovered. But is the move to keep Pluto's planetary status at the cost of the other planets? Does it devalue what it means to be a planet? And what does it matter what we call it anyway? And what does it mean for astronomy? Joining me now to look at what we can and can't call a planet and why it matters is Professor Richard Binzel, professor of planetary sciences at MIT and a member of the International Astronomical Union's Planet Definition Committee. Yes, there is one. He joins us from Prague, where the IAU is debating this issue right now. Professor Binzel, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
And hello from New York. What does it mean to be formally called a planet or not? I mean, isn't it just a name that we give to these far-off bodies?
Well, believe it or not, astronomers have never before defined the word planet, and that's what we're trying to do now. And the proposal for the definition simply is that an object has to be big enough and have enough gravity that it pulls itself into a sphere. So the very complicated explanation for a planet is that it's round.
That was easy enough. Why is there so much emotion tied up in Pluto's status as a planet? It wouldn't meet the standards if it was discovered today, isn't that right?
Well, by this definition, Pluto is round. Pluto is massive enough to pull itself into a sphere. So Pluto is round, and by this definition, Pluto is a planet. What's going on is there's been a revolution in our understanding of the solar system. There may be as many as 100, that's 100, more Plutos out in the outer solar system. And so that's why we have to decide what we're going to do about them, or at least what we're going to call them, because human beings just like to catalog things. It's a way of making sense of our universe.
Would the mere fact that there would be scores of these bodies lead them to maybe be excluded just because nobody will be able to keep track of them?
Well, that's one argument that says, oh, there's going to be so many we can't keep track of them. What we propose is basically to make a list of Pluto-like planets. So Pluto will have its own category of all the other Pluto and all the other Plutos that are out there. That's what our solar system now consists of, or that's what we're discovering our solar system consists of. And I think school children will still memorize the eight planets and the ninth planet, Pluto, and they'll say, oh, look at this list of 100 other Plutos. And kids who memorize all the dinosaurs' names, they'll know all these names, too.
We can take calls for Professor Richard Binzel, who's a planetary sciences expert at MIT, who's joining us from Prague. Anything you wanted to know about planets? Anything you'd like to tell us how you feel, maybe, about Pluto being a planet? Give us a call at 212-433-WNYC. That's 433-9692. Now, some have said that Pluto is more like a comet, and if I heard your definition properly, why aren't comets the same as planets? They're spherical, aren't they?
No, comets are very small objects, usually just a few miles across, and they don't have enough self-gravity to pull themselves into spheres. They can be roundish in shape, but to be a planet, it has to be gravity that's forcing you in to being a sphere. And if you just happen to be round and be lucky, that doesn't count. And I'm really sorry to say that the moon is still a moon, even though it's round, it goes around the Earth. You know, moons and moons go around planets, and planets go around the sun.
And the moon's bigger than Pluto, isn't it?
Our moon is, in fact, bigger than Pluto. So, again, the poor moon, it's going around the Earth, and if it could only sneak away and get out on its own, it would be a planet, too. But a moon goes around a planet.
So now, depending on how you and your colleagues vote next week, you could, in one fell swoop, render obsolete every astronomy textbook in schools and universities throughout the world. Is it worth it?
Well, the solar system is what it is. I mean, this is new discovery. This is science. If we never, ever had to rewrite a textbook, how boring would that be? This is just the culmination of nearly 20 years of search and discovery that are showing a completely new structure to our solar system. So science advances, and textbooks do have to be rewritten.
Yeah, the political reporter in me thinks that maybe the textbook publishers might be pushing this. There's none of that kind of outside influence, is there?
No, not at all. We wish that it were, of course. But it's all about science, and it's all about science pushing new frontiers. And when we have new knowledge, we've got to figure out new ways to teach it.
Is there a chance that the vote might not pass?
Oh, well, you never know. It has to. You know, the early returns are good, actually, among the astronomers. We'll get to next Thursday, and we'll see.
Is this unusual? How often do you get this kind of tension within the ranks of the world's astronomers?
Well, this Congress of Astronomers meets every 3 years. It's sort of like a United Nations. And, this is an issue that probably the largest issue that's come before them in terms of knowing that the public is watching or the public is keenly interested. Normally, there are a little more mundane matters as far as the public might be concerned. But, I think astronomers here realize that there are implications for rewriting textbooks.
John from Suffolk County, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. Doctor, I was just wondering if you had read Zachariah Sitchin's Genesis Revisited, or if you're familiar with that book, where he claims that there's a planet outside the solar system on an elliptical course that is supposedly swinging into our solar system around the year 2035 or something like that.
Well, I'm sorry, John, I haven't read that, and at least from all the data of which I am aware, and which is in the accepted as scientific fact, there is no such object.
And just to be clear, that's a doomsday planet. That's not a planet just dropping by for a friendly visit. But you're saying you're not aware of anything like that.
There is nothing in terms of accepted scientific fact for such a body.
Now, why was Pluto named a planet in the first place? If it's smaller than the moon and it's kind of more like a comet in a lot of ways and it's tilted at a different angle than the rest of the planets?
Well, when Pluto was discovered, it was thought to be larger than it's turned out to be. And, for 60 years, it was all alone out there as the farthest extreme of our solar system. And as bigger telescopes have come along and new advances in technology have come along, we're finding a whole new frontier in the outer solar system. And that's what's driving this revolution. That's what's driving the fact that textbooks are going to have to be rewritten no matter what vote this body takes. The facts and the science of a revolution in our understanding of our own solar system are unchanged.
Cliff from Brooklyn, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yes, I attended a debate several years back at a local planetarium regarding Pluto as a planet. And on the museum side, I heard several professors and doctors state that Pluto is essentially just the largest chunk of objects within the Kuiper Belt. Is that correct, or would that theory hold correct?
Yeah, so this region out beyond Neptune is called the Kuiper Belt. The two largest known objects are Pluto, currently known objects are Pluto and this thing called UB313. And what we are proposing is that the largest of these will be called planets. So Pluto would be a planet, UB313 would be a planet, and there may be as many as 100 other Plutos out there. Get it? It's really amazing, but there could be as many as 100 more Plutos out there. And if they're Pluto is a planet, and if they're like Pluto, they get to be planets too.
Yeah, Professor, how do we go from a dramatic, sort of historically grounded, mythologically grounded names like Saturn and Jupiter and Pluto to UB-313, which doesn't exactly roll off the tongue. What's going on with the naming committee over there?
Yeah, we don't mean to be so cruel. UB-313 is just a provisional name in a very boring astronomy system. But once it is approved as a planet, then it will get a proper name. It's popularly called Xena, but it's unlikely that name would be approved.
Is that a copyright problem with Hollywood or something?
I actually don't know.
Okay. Craig from Brooklyn, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. You know, I consider myself an amateur astronomer, and even for a few years in college, considered myself an astronomy major until I ran across something called partial differential equations and had to rethink my career choices. But
calculus, yes.
But I just find it amazing that this is such a big deal. I don't understand why. And now you came close to answering. You did. The professor came close to answering it earlier. In terms of how the textbooks are going to have to be rewritten and how it's going to reshape our view of cosmology and all of that. But you know, even the New York Times had this thing on the front page in the lead story article the other day. And I just don't see why this has such far-ranging implications, especially to anybody. I mean, I just don't see why it's such a big deal. Maybe
Craig, let me ask you this. You've heard of astrology and the sun signs and all of that.
I'm sorry, the fire department across the street.
Oh yeah, Brooklyn. I know.
I'm sorry. I hear you now. They're gone.
Okay. You've heard of astrology and how people get their fortunes told and so forth. And this has been going on for centuries. What the discovery of new planets would do would, among other things, kind of overturn that. Isn't that kind of a big deal?
Assuming you believe in astrology, yeah.
Sounds like you don't.
Well,
yeah. If I might add, I think it's actually rather simple. If you're defining planets as things that are big and round, you can teach that to a school child. And then when you get into college, then you can go into the physics and start solving those partial differential equations and really see in detail how it works. But round is a concept that's easy to understand at any level, from simple to partial differential equations.
All right.
Okay, I don't know if he was quite convinced. You're listening to WNYC 93.9 and AM 820. I'm Errol Lewis of the New York Daily News, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. We're talking about what makes a planet a planet, as Pluto's status is open to question by the international body that oversees that kind of thing. We are talking with Professor Richard Binzel, Professor of Planetary Sciences at MIT, and you can join us at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. Sid, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, Sid.
Hi there.
You've been studying planets?
Yeah, in fact, I'm actually quite interested in them. And recently, like right now, I just heard that the objects in the Kuiper Belt that would be sized like Pluto would be considered. Well, if you think about it, Oort cloud itself has got all sorts of comets and objects of that, yet no one has ever thought of considering those. So I'm wondering what keeps those separate.
Sid, how old are you?
10.
All right, Sid, that's a terrific question. In the Kuiper Belt, we know there's a lot of objects out there, but we have not been able to discover any individual one. So in order to name an object a planet, we have to be able to see it and identify it. But here's what's so great, Sid, about this whole new definition of planets and maybe there being 100 more Plutos out there. You can grow up to be an astronomer and start discovering planets yourself. How exciting is that? It's been 75 years since there's been an announcement of a planet discovered, and now you can grow up in an age where you will be able to discover new planets.
Well, actually what I believe by is, I had heard somewhere that they are discovering planets in other solar systems, so when you refer to discovering planets, do you mean by our solar system or anywhere?
Well, you can look in both places. There are planets to be discovered still at home, and there's still lots more to be discovered everywhere else in the universe. So the universe is the limit, my friend.
Sid, you said you're 10. How long have you been an astronomer?
Not quite sure, really. I just got interested in the subject.
Hey, Sid.
4 or 5 years.
Hey, Sid.
Yeah?
I started out as an astronomer when I was 10 years old, too.
Well, he's got you beat there. He said he started out 4 or 5 years ago, I guess back when he was a kid.
Okay, well, I better look out for my job then.
Thank you so much for calling, Sid.
You're welcome.
Giovanni from Manhattan, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. The question I have for the professor, seems to me that if I recollect from my studies in astronomy, the Earth itself, you know, is not round, and you use roundness as a point of definition for a planet. Well, where does that put the Earth, you know, relative to an absolute definition of what a planet is?
Yes, and the definition does not strictly require absolute 100% perfect roundness. The fact that the Earth rotates and makes it bulge at the equator, kind of like some of the rest of us, is perfectly fine. Jupiter spins very fast, and it bulges at the equator. So, yes, for things that rotate fast and they're not quite perfectly spherical, that's quite all right.
Joanne from Manhattan, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. I just want to thank you for this conversation because I think it's so fascinating. It blows my mind to think about the universe and the galaxies. But I have two questions. First of all, so the definition of a planet is that it's round and apparently has to be in an orbit around our sun.
Correct.
Because our moon is not a planet. So it's just the moon and all the other things that rotate around other planets are moons.
That's right. Everything else is a moon, but there's one exception. There's one interesting exception. Pluto has a very large moon. It's nearly the same size as Pluto, and it does not go around Pluto. In fact, Pluto and its moon go around each other, and Pluto and its moon would be, under this definition, would get to be called a double planet. So that lucky moon named Charon would also be called a planet because Pluto and Charon would be a double planet. And, you know, the poor moon, as I said, it's going around the Earth, but if it would only go around, if it could only get the Earth to go around it too, the moon could be a planet. But
Professor, we've got about 30 seconds left. Critics of this move say that it devalues what it means to be a planet. Alan Boss, who was an astrophysicist at the Carnegie Institution in Washington, calls this a step backwards and says it's a demotion of the word planet. What would you say to somebody like him?
Well, it's the reality of our solar system. There are hundreds of planetary objects out there, objects that are like Pluto, you know, that are round. They have interesting properties on their insides that the way gravity works to pull them together. And it's time to wake up and say, hey, the solar system is different than when I was a kid.
Okay, we'll leave it right there. That's all the time we have for this subject. I guess we'll have to see what happens when the vote takes place this day next week. Professor Richard Binzel, Professor of Planetary Sciences at MIT, thank you so much for joining us from Prague. And coming up next, a look at how modernity is changing the face of South Asia. Stay tuned.
My very educated mother just served us 9 pizza pies. Let's see. There are 9. The 9 first letters of those 9 words.
Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org, and thanks.